I'm Redbeard, your conductor on this rock and roll train, and today in the studio, it's the anniversary of the final and finest hour of the arresting recorded musical legacy left by the Police. Every breath you
take. There's a book published called Synchronicity, which is about the meaningfulness of apparent coincidences. Is there any meaning in coincidence? And that's what I wanted this record to be about. That's a grand design. I'm not sure whether it comes off or not, but I wrote a song about synchronicity, about coincidences.
Yes, we only had one singer in the group, and we respected the singer's right to choose what he says and sings. And it's very important. You can't, you know, like, it's just not fair to make somebody sing words, you know, because we took ourselves seriously as being honest musicians, which was very honorable, but it actually put kind of a limitation on Andy and I. It meant that we had to write songs that expressed Sting's emotions. Hi, this is Stuart Copeland in the studio.
Hello, my name is Sting, in the studio for the making of Synchronicity by the Police. God help us.
Starting with 1978's Outlandos D'Amour, Regatta de Blanc, their breakthrough in 1980, Zenyatta Mandata, and Ghost in the Machine, you could debate whether the first four albums by the Anglo-American band The Police were significant enough to issue a warrant for their inclusion in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But this fact is certain. The 1983 Police album Synchronicity guaranteed it. Synchronicity was so massively appealing that millions worldwide who had never previously owned a Police album purchased it and then the previous four in numbers great enough to put all five on the chart simultaneously at the end of the year 1983. That's star power. Drummer Stuart Copeland, the sole American, was the Police commissioner, if you will, in London in 1977 at the height of the punk rock movement. But like the veteran of the force, guitarist Andy Summers, and chief of police, singer-songwriter Sting, none of them were actually spawned by that punk scene. In the long tradition of white musicians copying authentic black music, the reggae influences so prominent on the first four Police albums had been somewhat diluted by the time of Synchronicity's release in June 1983. So the Police were not handcuffed by the conventions of either punk rock or reggae. Singer, bass player, composer Sting opened my Police inquiry into Synchronicity.
I think there's a sort of golden moment in a career when you very naturally put your finger out in front of you and you automatically touch the pulse of a lot of people, like a kind of collective pulse. And you feel that. And you feel your connection with it. And therefore what you do very naturally is connect with it through your music. And so that you keep writing. And while you have your finger on this pulse, it's a very happy feeling, you know. It's like the height of your popularity. You know that what you do is going to connect in a very big way with a large group of people. And while that period lasts, and it can't last forever, everything you touch turns this way. And I don't feel so much connected to that now. I feel connected on a deeper level than the pulse. I feel connected to maybe less people, but at a deeper level. But at the time, I felt that at the height of the Police's popularity, we were connected to a mass consciousness, if you like, a feeling. You can't intellectualize it. It's just a feeling, you know, and it reflects in record sales and in ticket sales and just a feeling you get. And so, there is a moment where you think, oh, we've actually made it. That's what making it is. You feel connected. You don't feel like you're outside anymore. You are, in fact, the center of something. And you're not the only center. There are other centers, too. But you feel very, very much part of the web of communication.
The song Synchronicity 2 absolutely explodes out of your speakers. But why were the song and the album called Synchronicity? Here's Sting with the answer.
I'm an avid reader, and my college education never finished. I'll be an eternal student until I die. And at the time, and still today to a certain extent, I was very into Carl Jung, who was a Swiss psychologist. A contemporary of Freud, and in many ways an alternative to Freudian psychology. And he did a lot of work about dreams and symbolism. And he came up with this concept called synchronicity, I think in 1951, There was a book published called Synchronicity, which is about the meaningfulness of apparent coincidences. Is there any meaning in coincidence? And that's what I wanted this record to be about. That's a grander, it's a grand design. I'm not sure whether it comes off or not, but I wrote a song about synchronicity, about coincidences. And the concept interested me in that it was about accidents. And some of the greatest things that happen in music with a band are accidental, or apparently accidental, where you two members of the band will hit the same chord, or the music will shift to an area that you both agree on for some inexplicable reason. You'll find yourself on the same wavelength. It's like within the parameters of the music, there are lots of accidents, you know, lots of things ricocheting off each other.
With Sting writing about the topics as heady as theories of Carl Jung, it begs the question, how did Stuart Copeland and Annie Summers, the other two policemen, feel about Sting's musical ideas? Was it necessary that they agree with their frontman's lyrics? Find out from Police drummer and founder Stuart Copeland.
Yes, we only had one singer in the group, and we respected the singer's right to choose what he says and sings. And it's very important. You can't, you know, like it's just not fair to make somebody sing words, you know, because we took ourselves seriously as being honest musicians, which was very honorable, but it actually put kind of a limitation on Andy and I. It meant that we had to write songs that expressed Sting's emotions. And Sting and I have very, very different views of the world, very different politics, very different values, and are very, very different in many different ways. The things that I would express in a song are things that he would never even talk about. The conclusions I draw about life are very different from the conclusions that he draws. And so it was always a problem for me to write songs for him, because I would have to try and get into his mind and make his speech, which is not a real thing. It was very difficult. So it would be better, you know, it was best when I'd write instrumentals. That would work best. And fortunately, I didn't have that problem. I could play drums on a song whether I agreed with the lyric or not. It wasn't a big hassle for me. And I didn't disagree with the things that the ideas that he expressed in his songs. We would disagree violently in prose. In fact, this is a classic thing, was where sitting around a coffee table arguing politics, I'd hammer him into the ground and leave him speechless. He'd go away. The next day he'd come back with a song, and he'd have a three-word line, such as, "Russians love their children too," which would flatten me, blow me out of the water. Now, if we argued about that, I mean, I'd have this reason what's fallacious about that, and how this is misleading, and how can you say this when that, and all this stuff, and he wouldn't have any answers. He'd just sort of say, "Oh, well, God," you know, he's not very good at actually arguing in prose, but he can go away, and in the privacy of his composition room, get it, reduce the whole issue down to three words that will blow any logical argument out of the water.
Thank you.
Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Sting and Stuart Copeland for the anniversary of the Police Synchronicity.
Welcome back. In the studio with the Police, I'm Stuart Copeland with Redbeard.
In the studio, and I'm Sting with Redbeard, and he still has it.
Thank you both. Within a year and a half of its release, the album Synchronicity by the Police had sold more than 4 million copies in the U.S. One of those tunes, King of Pain, that inspired all those sales, paints a vivid lyrical string of stirring allusions. King of Pain was written by Police singer Sting, and I asked him out loud if it came to him quickly.
Actually, it was something I said. I remember I was, I just left my first wife. Very painful break. And I went to Jamaica to try and pull myself together, you know. I was fortunate to be able to go to Jamaica, I have to say. I stayed at this nice house, and I was looking at the sun one day, and I was with Trudy, who's now my current wife, and I said, look, there's a little black spot on the sun today. And there's a pause. And I said, it's my soul up there. Yeah, I was full of hyperbole. And I said that, and I back then wrote this down, you know.
There's a little black spot on the sun today. It's the same old thing as yesterday. There's a black hat caught in a high tree top. A flagpole rack and the wind won't stop. I have stood here before inside the pouring rain with the world turning circles running round my brain. I guess I'm always hoping that you'll end this rain, but it's my destiny to be the king of pain. There's a little black spot.
Ah! It's the same old thing as yesterday.
Like its predecessor, Ghost in the Machine, the Synchronicity album was highly produced and much more sophisticated in sound than those first three Police offerings. One explanation would be that the Police were simply getting better at their craft. But as Stuart Copeland of the Police tells it, there was a more tangible reason for this musical improvement.
Well, Nigel Gray, who had recorded the first albums in his own studio and had given us a great deal, he'd been almost a part of the band when we were recording those first albums, he kind of fell out with our manager, and he had personal problems as well, and he started to fall apart as a person. And Nigel was kind of, he was going through a bad period in his life. His marriage was falling down. He was a doctor before becoming an engineer.
A medical doctor?
Yeah, in fact, in the first sessions that I did with him as Clark Kent, he would leave the studio. Sorry, I'm on call. He'd go out with his black bag and go and heal somebody, and he'd come back a few hours later. But his wife married a doctor and ended up with a rock and roll engineer. And he had, you know, kids and so on, and he just like had to make a choice between also the rock and roll life. He wasn't prepared for it. Us hardened musicians had sampled the rock and roll world, knew what we could take, knew what was for us, and turn our back on the pitfalls, you know. But he was like fair game. All the excesses, all the pitfalls of rock and roll hit this guy fast and hard, and he was shaking. And so he made the sensible. In fact, he's back to being a doctor in Devon now, and he's pulled himself together, and he's in good shape. But he just wasn't ready for us. He wasn't there. So we looked around, and we found the best engineer. In fact, we weren't looking for a producer. We found an engineer, Hugh Padgham, who had worked with Genesis. He's got a very long list of credits. Very, very able man, who just got the best microphone technique and knows how to record guitar and get the sounds and how to operate this fancy desk. And just like, and I think that the sound really, just the sound quality of the albums did take a sudden leap forward.
And as it turns out, Hugh Padgham brought more to the party than just his engineering expertise.
And he was also had the right kind of temperament. You know, the engineer in our group has always been kind of like the umpire in a way. You know, it would be usually democracy, kind of perverted democracy, but it was always two against one. It was pretty much the way decisions were made in the group, but sometimes there would still be an impasse and the engineer would have to pull us off of each other before there was a fatality. And and Hugh Padgham was very soft, quiet spoken, and actually fit that role very well.
Follow In the Studio in our 30th anniversary year on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online anytime at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Sting and Stuart Copeland of The Police for the 35th anniversary of Synchronicity.
Welcome back. In the studio with The Police, I'm Stuart Copeland with Redbeard.
In the studio, and I'm Sting with Redbeard, and he still has it.
Thank you again. When the Grammys were handed out in early 1984, The Police added two more to their collection, one for the entire Synchronicity album, the other for the best pop vocal performance for a single, On Every Breath You Take. Police bass player, composer, and singer Sting remembers the song Every Breath You Take as having some political overtones as well.
Every Breath You Take for me is the real song of the Reagan years. You know, it's a song about falling asleep. It's a, letting Big Daddy, letting John Wayne look after us, you know. Even though deep down we know he's an idiot, he seems to be saying the right. He seems to be saying the right things, you know. It's about surveillance. It's about being protected and controlled, and not really thinking, and not really struggling with the concept.
We're dealing
with anything, you know. And it's very seductive, and the song is very seductive. People love the song. But there's also a dark side to it that is very sinister. And I always try and play that when I sing the song. I try and play both sides. You know, it's seductive, but it's also quite menacing. And I think it really is about the Reagan years. We're all under the spell of this strange idea that everything was okay. It clearly wasn't.
Maybe that explains then why I noticed that so many romantics, if you will, claim that song is one of their favorites, and they'll sing along with you on Every Breath You Take up to a point, and then they stop singing. They don't like that, I'll be watching you.
There's a powerful ambiguity there, and it's, you know, it's one of the things I love in pop music, that sense of ambiguity.
Every breath you take. I'll be watching.
In some ways, the unofficial beginning of Sting's solo career came on the writing for the album Synchronicity by the Police. Sting explains.
Synchronicity was a very personal statement for me, as opposed to a personal statement for the band. And the band was riding on the crest of a wave, but the music, the subjects, are very personal to me. And this was almost. I'm trying to say this in a way that doesn't insult the other members of the band, because I couldn't have done it without them, and they're fantastic, and I respect them. But this was almost a solo record in the sense that the subject matter was very personal to me, and I couldn't really share it. You know, it's not that I sat down with the band and discussed what we're going to tackle. This was all I could write. You know, Every Breath You Take, Wrapped Around Your Finger were about my life. And so that was the end. The end of The Police, because I realized that I couldn't involve this kind of personal work in a democratic process, at least not about the issues. And so it was very clear to me during the making of this record, this was the end of The Police.
Sting may have known that The Police were finished during the writing and recording of Synchronicity, but Sting chose not to act on this feeling until after the sold-out New York City Shea Stadium show in front of 70,000 fans.
I didn't decide to do anything about it until we played Shea Stadium. Shea Stadium was kind of the apex of what we'd set out to do. You know, you play this huge, historic stadium. We were the biggest band in the land, biggest record and biggest single. Doesn't get any better than this. All we can hope to do is repeat it, keep repeating it. So I don't want to do that. I want to just keep repeating the same pattern just to make a living. And we all went back that night. We were staying in a house in Long Island, all of us with our families, and we sat around, put the fire on, we just had this huge triumph and turned to Andy and said, you know, it doesn't get any better than this. We should really stop. And surprisingly to me, Andy said, yeah, you're right. He said, we should stop. It can only go down from here. And so, I mean, the tour carried on for another 6 months after that. You know, it was a very successful tour, but we were only at the end of it that was it.
You can see that we, the young apprentice, caught between the silver and Charybdis, hypnotized by you, if I should linger, staring at the ring. We'll be right back.
the 30th anniversary tour. That was a tour that included 152 shows stretching into late summer 2008 to become the third highest grossing tour in history. And in BBC Radio 2's Top 100 Favorite Albums poll, Synchronicity by the Police ranked number 13 all time.
For me, the legend of the Police is intact. We were a legendary group. I don't know how we managed to do it, but we did. It's still intact. We stopped at the pinnacle of our success. And I don't want to spoil that. It's a magical time for me, and I really love what we did with the group, and I love the years I spent with those guys. And I actually probably love them more now than I did then. You know, well, maybe not, but I get on with them better. Because we were like brothers. We fought like brothers. But I have no regrets about that. But I'm really glad we did what we did.
That was Sting on the Police Synchronicity anniversary. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Stuart Copeland and Sting. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.